Hello.
Hi. Hi, hi, hi.
Hi, 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 friends. One friend in front of me, but...
Hi. Can you see us?
Are you guys there?
Are you there? Because this is our first video recorded podcast episode.
Chicka-wow-wow.
So if you're listening to this and you're like, I really want to see who's talking right now. I want to see their facial expressions and what they're wearing.
Exactly.
Head on over to SOS with Molly and Alyssa on YouTube. I feel like this will be like the Tuesday after.
Yeah, probably our episode will be released Monday. Videos will come out Tuesday.
I think. I'll try and get it on Monday too, but I feel like it'll take long. So.
Yeah. So we're going to start populating our YouTube with our episodes, obviously, but also some other video content here and there. So, you know, you have multiple platforms. Cheers. That was good.
Ooh.
That was good.
Wait, drink.
And
here we are. We're talking about something that really fascinated us and has inspired us. And like specifically this one book that Molly showed me, and I didn't know other women knew about this book, and I feel like everyone's just been lying to me. But it's Women Who Run with the Wolves by Doctor.
Yeah, she has a PhD.
PhD mean?
Yeah.
There's a doctor. Yeah, PhD is a doctorate.
Yeah, right? My dad has a PhD and he's a doctor, but he doesn't like to be called doctor.
Interesting. Clarissa.
Yeah, Pinkola Estes.
Estes.
But I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. But
Estes. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Emilio Noah Estevez.
Which I found interesting about her is that she has a PhD, but she's also a poet. And that explains her incredibly, deeply moving and beautiful writing that is like historical in the sense of she's telling these like age-old stories and traditional myths and fables and truths, not really myths. I don't even like that. mythological.
Yeah.
But she's very... she's such a poet with her. She's a painter with her words, and it's very evident that she is not just a scientist. She's very much an artist in the way that she tells these stories.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading and I was crying.
Yeah.
Molly got me a book, got me a copy.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's the best. And I was reading it and it's beautiful. Like, she breaks down things that, as a woman to your core, you kind of lose.
Yeah.
Like a kind of a side of yourself. And with these stories and with the stories of these women throughout life existence, it really puts into perspective how you can kind of shift your life to live to your truest self.
Yeah.
By these like really fascinating stories that are just so interesting and you wouldn't think that could be broken down in that way. And
yeah,
she does it.
That's the thing. She comes from a very deep line of storytellers, like in traditional formatting and like through word of mouth. And then she also has studied various, I'll read her description of her past, like how she came to this. So it makes sense. But she tells these stories that have been told throughout history in various different cultures and explains how, you know, there might be a story that is told in Finland that has been told for centuries. And then one in Argentina that's been told for centuries, and how all around the world, the same stories are being told in slightly different versions, but the same stories about and for women. And then you read it and you're already like, wow, this is an incredible story. You think you're getting the deeper meaning. You might interpret it a certain way. Then you read her breakdown of it and it is like life altering. And she brings up things you don't even know that you weren't even picking up on. And then on top of that, she's not just breaking down these stories. She has her whole own interpretation of what it means, what the wild woman archetype is, and what that is inside of you. And it will simultaneously show you how far you have strayed from that. No matter who you are, you might think you are so in touch with who you are and your femininity or your intuition or all of these things. Because we all live in today's society, I guarantee you, you are not. And you read this and it's just this like, she shows you that you're not, while also confirming to you that you will never lose that inside of you. The wild woman is always inside of you. So you don't have to worry about straying too far so that you can always come back home to her, and she is you and all of us. And it's just this very powerful, this book to
and
me
it,
became.
It sounds overwhelming, but like, we'll get into specifics with what she how she breaks it down.
Yeah. Then this book to me became nothing more than medicine. Like I would wait, you can pick it up at any point. You can open it up in the middle. You can, I could get to the very end of it and start it over. And it's like a whole, it's like a permanent fixture. You can always have it, always open it for a little dose here or there. And it was a thing I started reading in the mornings and just like a little bit and go about my day. And it truly started to feel like medicine. Like I need it with my coffee to set my day right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this book is beautiful. And this episode is kind of going to be like a low key book club ish thing.
Low key, high key.
High key. Yeah. That we want to continue to do because we just want to highlight books that inspire us. Another one that helped us with this episode that I found because I follow this illustrator, Harriet Lee Marion. And she illustrated this book by Kate Hodges called Witches, Warriors, Witches, Women, Celebrating Mythology's Fiercest Females.
Ooh.
And with these two books, they kind of like, they blend so well together because they, you know, Kate Hodges also breaks down women in all these stories that you might have heard of,
right.
You might not have heard of, and will help you kind of navigate where you are today in the 21st century, if you consider yourself a feminist, how those women will inspire you to kind of change gears, whether it's, like Molly said, finding a home within yourself, finding out what you love, not being quiet. A lot of these stories are about women being silenced.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it'll remind you of so many things
and
that happened today.
Silenced in society, but also
internally.
Internally.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah. And we had in Kip's episode talked about how we wanted to like ceremoniously celebrate this.
Yeah.
And if you are watching this, we are kind of dressed as.
Well, Alyssa is.
You are too, but it makes sense like to do it in a way that like speaks to you. Like I chose Medusa and we'll get into her more specifically.
Yeah.
But I chose her only because I love the idea of someone looking at me and dying.
It's
like, look at me. No, you're dead. It's like, I love that power, but it's way deeper than that with her story that I've come to learn. And I'm like, holy shit. So I'm wearing green. And a snake necklace.
There you go.
I tried to curl my hair to make it like really kinky and make it look like snakes. Didn't work out for me. Doesn't matter. We're making it work.
We're making it happen. Yeah, I was like stressing out the last couple of weeks. Like, what am I going to wear? What am I going to wear? And then I had this like epiphany today because I still hadn't figured it out. And I was like, you know what? This episode is us. Like, we're emphasizing staying true to yourself. You're like, to your core, who you are. And I was like, you know what? I'm not like a theme dress up person. I'm just not. And I can't force it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't. But you know, like I really, a lot of these women, especially I'm fascinated with, you know, my parents lived in Egypt for a couple of years and I took a deep dive into ancient Egyptian history and became fascinated with like Nefertiti and Isis. And I have a couple of figurines around my house. Like that's my little tribute to them.
Yeah.
Goddesses throughout history and throughout the world in my house. I just don't really, I'm not dressed like it, but you know, my spirit
kind of
is,
are.
I'm in all black. So basically any kind of witch and goth goddess, I'm you.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I was inspired when I read about Hecate and I was just like, Molly.
Yeah.
This, cause she's like the OG. Like witch.
Yeah.
Goddess.
Yes. So I think to start, I wanted to give a broad overview of how Clarissa describes the wild woman archetype, what her book kind of aims at and who she is for anybody that is interested in that book. And I'll intersperse it throughout. And then Alyssa is going to come into with some of the research like that you did on various women in the book that you are looking into. So for Clarissa, she says, this is a quote. So it says, there are many ways to approach stories. For more than half a decade, I studied amplification of leitmotifs, archetypal symbology, world mythology, ancient and popular iconology, ethnology, world religions, and interpretation. Viscerally, however, I come to stories as a cantadora, keeper of the old stories. Mm. I come from a long line of tellers, old Hungarian women and old Latina women. Both clans storytell in the plain voice of women who have lived blood and babies, bread and bones. For us, the story is a medicine which strengthens and arights the individual and the community. So basically saying, like, she comes at it from a very factual, historical point of view, worldview, as well as a deeply rooted in her ancestry line, women who tell these stories and who are deeply rooted in what it means to be that in touch. She said, this is a book of women's stories held out as markers along the path. They are there for you to read and to read and contemplate in order to assist you toward your own natural one freedom. We must allow our souls to grow in their natural ways and to their natural depths. The wild woman belongs to you. She belongs to all women. To find her, it is necessary for women to return to their instinctive lives, their deepest knowing. And so it's basically the view or the idea that women in mythology or these iconic stories are all, there's vastly different stories and heroines and, you know, goddesses, but they're all a version of the wild woman. They're all a representation of the same thing, yeah. Which is the true instinctual nature of women. Yeah. And that's what this book dives into with her. And it is, I mean, I have bought this book for like all my best female friends, like, yeah. Sent it to them. You must read this. You must read. Yeah. Everyone needs to read it.
Yeah. There's a chapter in there for everybody.
Yeah.
About, knowing yourself, you know, not apologizing for your self identity.
Yeah.
Think about what wild woman means to you.
Right.
And like what you can take from that and how you shouldn't stifle yourself.
And in Clarissa's book, she emphasizes that the ugliest parts of ourselves are what we're taught to think are the ugly parts are actually the parts we need to be focusing on and are the most beautiful and the most truthful.
Yeah.
We're told to refrain from certain things or hide certain things or repress certain things. But those things that we now have come to think of as ugly traits that's exactly the wild woman archetype. That is your true instinctual, deepest knowing nature. And you should not be ashamed of it and not hide from it.
No, it reminds me of a girl we're going to talk about later. Futakuchi Ona. It's a Japanese,
mm-hmm.
Japanese creature, I feel like they call her like a
something
supernatural mythical
creature.
Yeah, they just call her that. But oh my god, it perfectly highlights everything that is wrong with what we tell women.
Yeah, yeah. The thing about, yeah, I'll go into the first one because the thing about a lot of these stories and these women, you'll realize they're almost like the origin stories for the issues that we as women have in society today. So,
and these are written in like 100 BC.
Yeah.
Like, these are like super old.
Yeah.
Things are like, oh, wow. Yeah. That just happened this year.
Yeah. This is always
the situation.
It's basically, it's reaffirming in the sense that like, oh, women, it binds women together throughout time, but it's also depressing because you're like, oh, we're still in this. Hecate is the one Alyssa mentioned earlier. She said, I resemble her today because I'm wearing all black like a witch.
But she's also like, she's all for women.
Yeah. Very like empowering for women.
Yeah.
Which is why. So she's the OG witch. She was very popular. But when a woman becomes very popular and powerful and respected, you know, a lot of men tend to have an issue with that. And
what?
Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed.
No.
But there were a lot of patriarchal writers, like Sophocles was one. They started to darken her story and kind of reassociate her with death and evil.
Yeah, because she was like, she was cool. Like she helped women with like fertility if they were having issues.
Yeah.
She also like loved dead people and hanging out with the dead.
Yeah,
like
she could heal.
Yeah,
she was like would protect newborns. She had in-depth knowledge on herbs and like. She was just a healer and a helper and a lover of humanity, especially women.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it just became this thing of, oh, well, the only explanation for this woman to be so healing and for her to have an affinity for people who are struggling having children or for affinity for newborns or for the dead is she must be associated with evil and the devil. That's the only explanation that they could come up with, they being men at the time.
Yeah.
But she's known to be depicted holding a torch because she infamously helped Demeter find her daughter after she was taken to the underworld.
Persephone.
So she would assist Persephone to leave the underworld to visit her mother. She often visited graveyards, befriending the dead mm-hmm. and local dogs, it said.
yeah, she loved dogs.
Yeah, and she's now beloved by marginalized communities like the LGBTQ and sex workers and the homeless because of her love for the transitions of life.
Yeah. It makes sense too.
Yeah.
And I think about her, like reading about how she was so carefree and how she dealt with death. And like,
yeah,
you know, it was like, that is so amazing how you can look at life that way. Like she, in a lot of stories would not only like heal people, you know, if they were going to die, but if it was their time, it was their time, and she helped them transition to the afterlife,
yeah.
but she remained friends with them. And it was like, not this negative thing.
Right. It was like a continuum.
Yeah, exactly. It was just another phase.
Yeah.
And of course that's intimidating for right. a woman to have that kind of power
right.
and influence, and like, how dare she hang out in the underworld
yeah.
and the underbelly
so
of life and society.
If you can't deny what her gifts and her strengths are, the best you can do is associate it with the devil or something evil
yeah.
to diminish her power or whatnot. But yeah, so she's kind of the OG witch, very empowering for women.
Yeah. I feel like you're an OG witch.
Yes, thank you. I love to think so.
Because you manifest things in an interesting way.
I do. Stuff that I look in the mirror and say to myself happens.
And you also, I feel like you have like a metaphorical torch for your like female friends.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I think that's just so beautiful that they're... I mean, like, I don't think that you are associated with the devil, but who knows?
Well, I'm not convinced that I'm not, okay?
So that's why I feel like you're like a
thank
little,
you.
You're Hecate light.
Hecate light. There we go. I am big on, like I said, passing this book on to every female
right?
I know.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So,
yeah. So that's why you're gothy vibe. And like,
there
also,
we go.
I told you this too, Alexander McQueen and
yes.
Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Yeah.
They did like a whole line, I think together,
yes.
based off of Hecate. Like the fashion is wild, but it's basically
yeah.
like long black coats, like ravens
ooh,
everywhere.
Yes.
I think there were ravens. Like
I mean, that's very much like both of them separately. So together, I can only imagine. Oh.
Yeah, there was like one with like a huge top hat, and I want to send that to you.
Yes.
Like, get a top hat.
Oh my god, I actually would have done that. Yeah,
it was like a huge black top. I was like, that's hilarious. But yeah,
let's talk about Medusa, who you are honoring.
I know.
In your
I
green
feel like
snake.
I know. I chose and I went all in on this. I bought this thing on Amazon, and not to say that I'm not proud to represent her, but her story is way more dark than I was anticipating.
Yeah.
I mean, when I thought about Medusa,
you know what?
That's yeah.
like so many women. That's our point today is like, oh, I like her. She's beautiful. She's this. And then when you really look at, there's a lot more layers to her than you know, because you're not shown that.
Yeah. So Medusa was one of the daughters of a couple sea gods. I forget their name. And you know, she was beautiful, and everyone knew of her to be this beautiful, kind woman.
Yeah.
And I believe it was Poseidon, the sea god, who like was obsessed with her and obsessed with her beauty
mm-hmm.
and wanted to have sex with her. And she was like, no, it's like oh, like every story is just like, I want to have sex with you. And they're always like, no. So he raped her.
Oh,
in a temple that was dedicated to Athena. And Athena was so offended by that, not to Poseidon, but to Medusa.
Of course.
So Athena.
Pitting women against each other.
Right.
From day
exactly.
One.
This is like the origin of victim blaming. Athena mm-hmm. then punished Medusa.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you.
Yes.
Is this better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, cool. Athena punished Medusa. And basically she was the reason why. So she made Medusa have snake-like hair.
Mm-hmm.
She made her haggard. She was no longer beautiful.
Yeah.
And then she, if you looked at her, you'd become petrified. You would turn to stone.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Right.
Oh, it's her fault. And the power was, what's beautiful about this too, in a weird way, is that the curse was so strong on her and she was so close to her other two sisters that her sisters absorbed that curse.
Oh.
And so they kind of lived together, like they were loyal to each other in isolation.
Oh. Interesting.
And I thought that was a beautiful kind of take on it too. They were called the Gorgon sisters.
Oh, you know what? The sisters thing is also really interesting because in a lot of the stories in Clarissa's book, in The Women Who Run with the Wolves, sisters are involved in the stories only to find out that what they actually represent is two sides of the same woman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one story, I'm not going to tell the whole thing because it's a whole little couple pages in her book, but it's called Manawi. It's a story in the book that she goes through, but it's basically the story of this man who is trying to win the hearts of these two women that are in a village and they're sisters. And he wants to win both of their hearts and ask for their joint hand in marriage. So you're reading the story and you're like, this is weird. He's trying to marry both of them and they're not fighting over him. The only obstacle to him marrying them is that he doesn't know their names. And so he goes to their house he's like trying to find out their names. He's talking to them. He's like in love with them and they're very different. The sisters, one is, you know, they're kind of opposites of one another, but they get along very well. And then this man has a dog and his dog, keeps running back to the village after the man has left. And he kind of like spies on the sisters and
the dog.
And he overhears the sisters calling each other by name. And then eventually, he tells his master the names and, when she breaks this down, and then he goes to them and marries them and everything is great. And then she breaks the story down and she says, you realize that, first of all, the dog represents the man's instinctual nature, like just pure instinct, like a dog, like you're on the scent of the trail. So basically to say the point of that story here, it's supposed to represent, and the sisters are supposed to represent the dual nature of women.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it speaks about the mystery of two powerful forces within a single woman. So this is a quote from the book. She says, anyone close to a woman is in fact in the presence of two women, an exterior woman and an interior creature. She calls it like an interior creature. Yeah. So if she says, if a woman hides one side or favors one side too much, she lives a very lopsided life, which does not give her access to her entire power. And she also, the point of this story, another thing is that if a man is to truly make a good partner for a woman, he needs to accept and love and know the names of all the sides of the woman he is marrying, know their names. He can't just love them. He has to know their names. And that is so powerful because it's like not enough to be like, I love this about you. You have to be able to acknowledge, like the woman I love is this. And she is this, and she is this, and name those things and truly know them. And only then are you granted access and to her. And it's beautiful.
I wonder,
and the only way for him to get to know their true names is to be in touch with his deepest instinct, which is what his dog represents, which gave him the names.
So I wonder, I don't know if she goes into this in the books. I haven't finished it, but why do you think women have that dual nature to begin with? Is it because there's a part of us that has to be repressed?
No, I think the dual nature of women, the duality in women is completely natural. I think society has done its best to oppress that.
Mm.
And, you know, say that women minimize the depth of women, like you're this or you're that, women are this or it's this, and hasn't allowed for room for women to be like more complex characters.
I see what you're saying. See, in my head, and what I think like a lot of women today do, and I see like both ways. I see in that way that society's repressed, and like maybe there's a way, and I think maybe the duality could be a symptom of that, you know. It's just like, I'm going to figure out another version of myself because I've been putting on a mask.
Oh, well, it depends how you look at duality. Because in this story, duality was not. It was, I have these various sides of myself that are equally as important and equally as a part of me. And you have to accept all of it to be with me.
Mm.
but society has obviously forced us into false versions of ourselves. I believe that. But I think our duality is at the core of human nature for women and men to a degree too. It's like humans are there's so many layers to us.
I know. I think the focus on women is interesting too, just because of the fact of how
we are told
this
to
is
shut
supposed
up.
To be. See if you agree. Like, I think Lilith's story is a lot like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you don't know about Lilith, I actually played her in a play before, but it was kind of like a very abstract play. I didn't really know much about her. Mm-hmm. So I just knew that she was like this like succubus, this demon. Oh, I didn't really know her story. And when I read about it, it was so crazy.
Oh, I know. It's insane.
And you knew about it.
Yeah.
So she's actually, and I think in, it's Jewish folklore that she was the first woman. She was Adam's first wife.
Okay.
And they were married and they were talking one day, as couples do, and they started talking about sex. And Adam had mentioned that, you know, they're only supposed to be in missionary style. Because she's supposed to be underneath him because he
submissive.
Is the male. Exactly. He's supposed to be on top. He's the male. He's the head of the household, what have you. So Lilith like was not having it. She literally laughed in his face and she says, "You lie beneath me. We are both equal, for both of us are from the earth." Yep. And I was like, yes, bitch.
Yeah.
Get that tattooed on me immediately. And it's so interesting. I mean, you can imagine that did not work out for her. Like, I think what happened.
She got exiled, right?
She got exiled. Well, she got mad. She ran away. And then Adam called to God and was like, get her back. So he got a couple of his angels to go after her. And they basically told Adam, they're like, all right, if she doesn't come back, and they told Lilith this too, if she doesn't come back, then she's going to have 100 demon children and they're all going to die every day.
What the fuck?
And she rather have her demon children die than to go back and have boring sex with Adam.
Well, then to be not equal to her partner.
Exactly. So that happened. So in that, she became this demon because she was kind of like became vengeful with her demon children dying. It was dark. And
right.
You know, they say that she would come and snatch children or something
like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like, it's insane because she just wanted to be equal.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just wanted her freedom.
Right.
And like, they were like,
she wasn't even trying to dominate him. She's like, no, we're equal.
Yeah.
And that was not gonna fly.
And in other tellings of the story, she ends up becoming friends with Eve and gives her advice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because there's a duality there too, because Eve was always written to be like, I guess, submissive. Like, she was the pleasant like wife that was subservient to Adam. That's how she was written, and Lilith is the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
So I think there's a duality there with their relationship and how you got both. And it was like how these women dealt with Adam, I think, is a lot how we deal with men now.
Yeah.
And society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why wouldn't you want to like,
I know.
Like, why would you want to conform?
Right. And then feel like you're disrespected by the person that you're with.
Yeah.
Like, they think you are less than them.
Yeah.
Like, nope.
Oh God. Lilith is so relatable.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, this is kind of related, but kind of not. I did want to bring up how in Women Who Run With the Wolves, she brings up like common themes throughout. You know, there's myths, there's legends, and then there's fairy tales. They're all kind of wrapped in together, and how the common theme with female protagonists is like there's a type of suffering. They're tricked in some way, and then they have this coming to Jesus moment with ourselves, kind of like this deeper knowing. They sink into their intuition and sense of selves, and that's how they get themselves out. And she said, this is a quote. It says, "The development of knowing begins with suffering. This progresses from first being unaware, then tricked in one way or another, thence finding one's power again, and more so, or finding one's way to power again, and finding one's way to depth. And she brings up like Rapunzel, for example, mm-hmm. you know, like you're, it's just always this helpless damsel in distress.
Beauty that's and the
tricked.
Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, Snow White, eat the apple. It's like, you're tricked, but then you are enlightened through, but these women, then they're usually like locked away mm-hmm. and in being locked away is when they come in close connection with themselves. So it's really in a story that a lot of people translate, a lot of kids interpret, or, you know, people are like, well, she's a damsel in distress. The prince saved her. Mm-hmm. It's really the way that she's looking at these. She's like, no, these are women who were punished by society, locked away, tricked. And then they found their way to a deeper level of themselves. And that's what got them out.
That just reminded me of Yenenga. I think I told you about her.
Yeah, go into that one.
It's almost, actually. Yeah, it's so similar to that. She's basically like, yeah, she's a continuation of that entire story. Like, so mm-hmm. She was an African princess, I forget in what years.
Yeah.
But she was a really skilled warrior. And her father was the king, and she was the strongest in her army. She was like the lone woman
yeah.
with her brothers fighting for her father, fighting for her kingdom. And she was the best, mm-hmm. the best. And like, as she got older, she realized she wanted to settle down. She wanted to meet a man. She wanted to have babies. Like, she just really had a maternal
yeah.
instinct about her that she just had to fulfill. So she went to her father and she asked him if she could basically like take a break right. and like, yeah. hey, can I meet somebody?
Can I fuck?
And he was like, absolutely not. Like, no fucking way.
I need you on the battlefield.
Right. Exactly. And she was pissed. There's this one thing that she did, an act of rebellion that I really respect. She planted a field of okra and then let them die and rot, like a huge field of okra, and just let it all die.
Oh.
Let it all rot. And she said to her father, when he asked her like why she did that, she was like, this field looks like how I feel.
Oh my
here
God.
I am, my ovaries withering and dying, my soul crying out for someone, and you don't care.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I have chills.
I know. So basically that was a lot for her dad to take in. So he was like, I don't trust you. So he locked her up.
Here it is.
He locked her up. And she eventually, I think she was like really good friends with the guards, and they were, you know, obviously male. So she took like a male's disguise, a male guard's disguise, and escaped.
Yeah.
And when she escaped, she met a man. They mm-hmm. fell madly in love. They had babies, and eventually they moved away and then moved back, and the father had warmed to her, and mm-hmm. the, like, everything was fine.
It ended well.
Yeah. And it ended well. And of course, it, you know, she had her shit together. She was a badass warrior who mm-hmm. held her own against these men. And I love that story because, you know, it talks about the issues that women
face today. It's the duality again.
Exactly.
There it is again. The fiercest warrior and with the strongest instincts for like life and maternal instincts. It's the two can coexist. They're not at odds.
Right. But we're told like how many... there's so many instances where we're told that we can't have it all as women, that mm-hmm. we have to choose between this or that.
Yeah. And you know why that is because what we consider having it all is what society usually means by that is like having a family mm-hmm. and having a career. But why would we be told we can't have it all? Oh, because men can't have it all because they can't bear life and have children. So I think they're the ones telling us you can't have it all, mm-hmm. but it's become a thing that we all say, women included, you can't have it all. You can't have it all. It's like how kids, they hear their parents say something over and over. They start to say that and say that throughout their lives. And it's basically like women were told by men at a certain point, you can't have it all because they don't. They have their careers. They have families, but the women hold down the household.
But it's also because, and this is what she brought up too, it's just like she was listening to her biological clock, and
yeah.
that's what we have in our fucking brains.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, fuck, okay, I'm 30 and I have no boyfriend, or I'm 35, I have no prospect. What am I supposed to do? I know I'm, you know, so it's like you want to throw yourself into a career, and maybe you have.
Yeah, but then Hugh Hefner could keep spewing out babies if he wanted to the very end.
Right. But I know women that have got married when they were really young. And they never got to figure out what they loved and figure
right.
out what they wanted to do.
Because they didn't have this, a lot of them didn't have the opportunity to do the self-discovery that is that this book is talking about. You can do it at any point. It's not like you're married, it's too late. But what I mean if you fall into the societal norms without taking care of yourself along the way, that's how you start to get lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's really interesting. You had, what was the Baba Yaga one is really interesting to me.
Oh my God. That's another duality.
Yes. And this was like, so Clarissa brings that up in the book. She said, there's a classic quotes, hag maiden, basically like this, you know, she presents herself as an old, ugly woman. And if the character is nice to her and takes care of her, she reveals her true nature, which is a beautiful woman, mm-hmm. and rewards the person who was kind to her. Or, you know, vice versa. There's like the evil witch that gives the apple. And then, you know, there's always that the hag maiden. And she said,
Baba Yaga is like the
OG. The quintessential. Yeah. So she says the classic hag maiden in mythology shows us what it means to be not withered, but wizened. And she says, if a woman holds on to this gift of being old while she is young and young while she is old, she will always know what comes next. And to me, that means what comes next in your soul, not like predicting the future. But Baba Yaga is this wild feminine power. And basically, she comes across, you know, stereotypically wicked, and she's ugly, and she's a little bit harsh, and she's not the kindest, but
and she might eat some children sometimes.
Yeah, she might eat a child here and there, but
she also teaches them.
Yeah, so she's a wild woman and a wise teacher.
Yeah,
and she lives how she wants, she looks how she wants. They emphasize in a lot of these stories how ugly she is. She has the ability to change. She basically is like fuck you to the world. She's true to herself.
Yeah,
and all of its ugly realness, and teaches that lesson to the young women that she comes into contact with.
It's like she knows who needs the wisdom
deepening.
Yeah
and this is another quote from the book because I'm obsessed with her, but she says a culture that authentically promotes individual development will never make a slave class of any group or gender.
Wow.
And it's basically like
it's a heavy ass statement.
Yeah. And it's like Baba Yaga promotes individual development. That's all that she's about is individual, personal, deep development. And if a culture promotes that, there will be no inequalities.
Wow.
Basically, that's kind of what it is.
That's like the opposite of socialism.
Yeah. Well, and she has another theme that runs throughout the book, which is basically the cycles, the natural cycles of life and death and that are within us. And in every daily life, even like flowers blooming and flowers dying and seasons and all of this. Mm. And she says, you know, one thing that the wild woman to get in touch with herself, you know, wake up every day and ask yourself, what must I give more death to today in order to generate more life?
Wow.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's like this. That's the complete circle of life. It's making room for something.
You have to make, there has to be an out, a way for things to get out, for more to come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That, it's, I really love this other story, that is kind of, that I didn't know if I wanted to talk about too, because it literally brought me to tears reading it. And it's like, it hits here a little bit.
Yeah.
And, it's that story that maybe you've heard out there. It's the Soul Skin, Seal Skin.
Yeah,
so it's about Selkies. And Selkies were, in Scottish folklore, these seals that, these female seals that would sit on rocks. They would, you know, they live their life living in the ocean. Mm-hmm. But there was a myth of sorts where if a man stole the skin of that seal, that she would become, I guess, more human-like, one, and would also would have to be married to him.
Yeah. Because the women would take, when they would come up on the rocks, they'd take their seal skin off and sunbathe, right? They'd lay on the rock. So their skin.
That's it.
Yeah. So their skin was like laying next to them, like their clothes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. And if the skin was hidden from them, that the longer it is hidden from them, the longer they're bound to that man.
Yeah. And the more they forget where they came
exactly.
from.
Exactly. And in a lot of those instances, these Selkies would, you know, they would fall in love with their man. They'd have the bait. They'd have his babies and they'd be content with their family. They'd love their family.
They'd learn to love like an earthly life.
And... right. Except she would always disappear and stay by the ocean, she would just stare longingly at the cliffside. Even if she forgot why, yeah. she would just stare there longing to go home. And in both books, they emphasize, and especially in Clarissa's, mm-hmm. The going home state.
Yeah.
And returning to oneself. And in this story, this particular story about the Selkies, they would basically, in a lot of instances, find their skin again. Or their family members, their other seal family members from the ocean would bring them a new skin.
Yeah.
And then they would just become seals again and disappear and leave their family behind, their children that they love deeply. Yeah. And they would only return as seals sometimes to see their children mm-hmm. at the shore.
Yeah. And like remember.
Yeah.
When they put
and then
that
disappear.
And they'd remember again what felt like to be connected to who they really were when yeah. they put that on.
And it's like that. Phrase of like, yeah, being connected to who you really are, that like, I don't know why it like really hit home for me.
Yeah.
Like Clarissa, Dr. Estes, she like drills home the power of returning home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically
over and over. That's what all these stories are about.
Yeah. And that, you know, she says that we have to return to our soul home to become one with ourselves, that you can't trap us. We're naturally, innately wild women, right? Mm-hmm. So we must have that time to stop and find our skin again, basically. And yeah. she says, and I quote, "When a woman is too long gone from home, she is less and less able to propel herself forward in life. Instead of pulling in the harness of her choice, she is dangling from one. Ooh. Her fuse burns shorter and shorter. Women continue in their day-to-day routines, looking sheepish, acting guilty and smirky. Yes, 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 I know, they say. I should, but it is the buts in their sentences that are the dead giveaways that they have stayed too long."
Oh, I have chills.
I mean,
this yeah, making excuses for the things in your life that aren't serving you.
But like reading that, I mean, I maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I feel like that was like looking into a mirror. Ugh. Like how many times in your life have you been like, yeah, but like I'm literally doing that right yeah. now with a job that I don't want.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that brings me such distress.
Oh, I know.
And I keep
silencing that part of
yeah.
you.
Yeah. I like it I is know. Really hard.
It's hard work. And that's one of the things that she said is when she talks about doing this work in her work, she says, "Fear is a poor excuse for not doing the work. We are all afraid. It is nothing new. If you are alive, you are fearful. And it takes a heart that is willing to die and be born and die and be born again and again. It is no easy task. It's not like to keep return. You don't just get home and stay there. That's the point of this. We all drift off here and there.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep being like doing the work.
Emotional.
I know, but it's so, it is, it's deep.
And it's also, just so you know, to clarify, like going home doesn't necessarily mean going to a place, right?
No, actually, never really.
No, I mean, it can be a place for sure.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, well, for example, and I mentioned it here because I thought I really love this example. It was adorable. She says that a Romanian friend of hers, this is Dr. Estes, mm-hmm. a Romanian friend of hers' grandmother, like they recognize this grandmother was in her going home state because she one day out of the blue grabbed a wooden chair and stuck it in the middle of her backyard and just sat in it staring at the sun
oh.
for hours.
Oh
and
my
no
gosh.
One could no one could bother her. I'm like crying. No one could bother her, but she, like the grandmother would describe it as medicine for the eyes.
Oh my god.
I don't recommend it. But like it's just so interesting how that is something that like
it's like it in your bones.
In her bones. Yeah, it's just like an act. It's kind of an act of rebellion.
It's visceral too.
It's completely visceral.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think too, because I feel like more than once in my life, I've had to be, I've made those excuses and I had to realize, but the point I'm trying to make is I don't know where my going home state is.
Right. But I think that's the thing is that you can't, if you always knew what it was, it'd be easy to get back to.
That's true.
You know?
So I wonder like, what do you think the easiest way to return to yourself and going home?
I think it has to revolve around silence and solitude on some level.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I know so many people who like, I love alone time, but it's, and silence is something that in today's day and age, a lot of us don't get a lot of, you know, yeah. But like alone time, so many people are so afraid to be alone with their own thoughts.
And turning off their phones.
Yeah. They just stay busy, stay doing this. Like get off work and who's out, who's doing, you just don't want to go home and be with your thoughts. And so many people are like that. It's yeah. just like, but I don't think you can get to that deep inner knowing home state if you're not willing to do that with yourself.
If you stop with the excuses.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't stop with the excuses.
Right.
She says also like, and I want to make this clear to like also people listening, you know, it's important to understand that going home does not necessarily mean like that it has to cost money. It just costs oh, yeah. time. It costs like a strong act of will to say, I'm going and mean it. You can call over your shoulder, I'm off for now, but I'll be back. But you must keep trekking homeward even so.
And those who love you will understand this about you and not try yeah. to hold you back from it.
That's another thing too, to get support from people, because you might, I won't name names, but I know this one mother that like gives up everything for her children
yeah.
and she doesn't do anything for herself. Everything is for her children. So she stops like her whole entire, like, you know, her,
and
her children are older now.
That's what you're told you should do. That's what good mothers do. And if you don't, there's a guilt associated.
Exactly. But what are you supposed to do? You know, like how does, when you're not supported, you know, by your family to find your going home state, like how do you, it's so difficult to find it in yourself and you yeah. don't know until you're sat with like a book like this, mm-hmm. frankly, or with a supportive friend or someone that actually listens to you.
Yeah.
Inside and out.
My dad, my whole life, every winter, in the summer too, every couple months, he'd go on a, I don't know, 3 to 5 day long backpacking, hiking, skiing, camping trip by himself, not even with my mom. He'd like literally have my mom drop him off at the trailhead. He'd tie his food in a tree. In the winter, he'd go and like build a snow cave and sleep in it and ski literally for days, bring his camera, a journal, and his gear. And my mom would know what milepost to pick him up at a couple days later, pick him up. And my whole life, he did that all the time. He did it last week. He does it all the time. And it's his going home state. And my mom knows that and supports that in him and doesn't have any sense of, can I come with you? Or why does he do this? Is it because he doesn't want to be with me? It's this pure knowing of just, this is what he needs. This is him returning home. It is his soul's need. It's nothing more than that. It's not personal. And you allow him that time. He needs it. We all need that on some level. That's what it is for him. But I grew up watching that and not questioning it. I didn't see, and my mom never questioned it. And I just gained this knowledge and appreciation for like, oh, that's what he's doing. And we all should, but like he should be allowed that space and no one should question it. And no one should question anybody else's true means unless it's like murder, like connecting yeah. to your soul and you need your time. And everybody, as much as people say, I'm not made for alone time, I don't need to be alone ever. We all do. I'm sorry. It's just that you don't want to be. And that's something you should work through. But we all need it on some level.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had like a big truth bomb in the face because I just realized, not that I didn't know really, but I just realized this is a going home state, is Ryan going to the studio.
You're right.
And you know, and I love when he goes to the studio. I think, but I get selfish.
Yeah.
Libra. I like, you know, I crave his time. You know, he works, we have separate schedules.
Right.
And you know, sometimes I'll give him a hard time, you know, mm-hmm. I'll lie about that. I'll just be like, ah, oh, come on, let's hang out.
And yeah.
I can see it on his face. It's just like he's losing that time to go to his yeah. going home state. And it's like he lights up when he goes, when he's able to go, and he wants to, you know, he wants to spend all the time there because he loves just yeah. creating.
And it's his own space.
And his own, yeah, by himself.
You're right. Yeah, yeah.
So basically, we're pro men, man caves.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. But the
and
thing
she
is,
sheds.
That's why, that's the whole point of all of this, though, is that man caves are a thing. It's an accepted thing.
And she sheds.
Yeah, but that's my point, is that those aren't really a thing. Like
they are now.
I don't like that term. It's
really?
Obnoxious.
It's the same. I guess it's the same
thing. Well, it's the
thing.
Same thing. It's yeah. the same concept.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't even hear that until recent years in that
yeah,
commercial.
It's
not
yeah,
like
the she shed,
man
my
caves.
She shed.
Man caves are like a thing.
Yeah.
And it's acceptable. And it's like, but all people need this.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I want to give you, Alyssa, props for finding this foundation to promote for this episode because it's perfect.
I know.
It's the Foundation for Women Warriors. So the Foundation for Women Warriors is a unique support organization created exclusively for the women veteran community of Southern California. They provide essential programs to empower the resiliency and professional development of women warriors. Every step is dedicated to supporting these outstanding women to navigate obstacles and realize their maximum potential after their service career. So to donate, please visit foundationforwomenwarriors.org/donations.
And next week we have
another guest.
We got a guest. It's director and filmmaker Kenneth Castillo, and he stops by and shares how he creates a space to highlight Latino stories in an industry that is desperate for new voices yet is consistently unable to propel them.
I'm so excited for this conversation. Alyssa and I have known Kenny for years, and
yeah, he's so talented.
Oh, he's
and
so
he has stories, especially about, you know, telling Chicano stories and that aren't told, and him, I won't.
Him maintaining integrity in this industry,
right,
which is what I love him.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't forget to tune in and then
follow us.
Yeah, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, at the SOS Pod.
Yeah.
Subscribe, rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Please leave a written review. The written reviews help us be discovered, which the algorithm really helps us.
Yeah.
So even if you're just like, hey, love it, don't care, it counts. Please just write something.
Yeah. And follow our YouTube channel. We are at the end of this episode, but full disclosure, this has taken us a long time to record because the video is a little technical difficulties.
We're having issues.
But I think this will be a video. We started this being like, this will definitely be on YouTube at the end of it. We don't know. But I think it will. But bear with us. We will definitely be on YouTube regularly at some point. But we'll figure it out. But anyway, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, guys.
And here's to turning meltdowns into magic.